to love. Earlier today, we were saying, He has risen. And that is so powerful that throughout the world, those words are said in different languages. I can recall a host of stories coming when the Iron Curtain had come down. And the troops would be intimidating the people and trying to cut the heart out of religion. And someone in the crowd would say, He is risen. And the people in the crowd, even in front of the threat of military might, would say, and power in that. And I thought, as we listened to the passage on Emmaus, the group had sort of left, these disciples, and they're on the road to Emmaus, they're going about a third of the way, about 7 miles. And then Jesus appears to them, and He begins to open the scriptures, and we'll look at them a little bit more. And they start to do it, and He starts leaving, and they say, stay, and He breaks bread. So did not our hearts burn within us, and they're so pumped. And they run back to the disciples, and they're hearing the stories that He's alive, that He is risen. But, by the way, risen indeed means that's a fact, Jack. I mean, it's for real. He is risen. He is risen indeed, truly, and some of the and He appeared to Simon, and I want us to look at that, and particularly the fact that He's alive and what that means. Back in 1968, on Good Friday, in Alaska, the ground shook. It was a 9-point earthquake. I wasn't there, thank you, Jesus. Because I served 10 years in Alaska, any of the pioneers, any of the old-timers of whatever age who were there would tell you stories about it. How whole blocks fell into the ground. How buildings just disintegrated and came down. And I would ask them questions of what it was like, and they said there were two things that every one of them said. The first thing they wanted to know was about their loved ones. And what did they want to know about them? Are they alive? Is he or she alive? And once that was established, the next great question, and it wasn't answered right away, and it took a great deal of faith for the people there, was what will life be like? This. And Anchorage, they considered moving virtually the whole city. Because it got hit really bad. And there are a couple of cities that had tidal waves that just took them out. And so, who is alive? And what will it be like after this? And I thought that this would be a good way for us to look at this passage where they realize he's alive. And then say it's true that the Lord has risen. And has appeared to Simon. Essentially, he's Christ has risen. He has. Okay. John Stott, the wonderful biblical scholar, said, "We live and die. Christ died and lived. He's alive." I was reading in C.S. Lewis, and C.S. Lewis said, "Some people think of the resurrection as a desperate last-moment expedition to save the hero from a situation which has gotten out of the author's control." Some people see the resurrection as a mission to rescue Christ, when in fact, it is a mission by Christ to die and to conquer death so he can rescue us, he can save us, he can live us, make our lives come. just simply a philosophy, not just simply principles that we follow, not just simply a great example, not simply a great life lived, but a God who can empower us to live great lives because He's alive. And with that, we are called to be moving in that power. What we have on this day is not just coming alive from death, but it's victory over death. Well, let's look at this. He's alive. That was a promise of what they're all saying. And then they say, it's true, or that's a fact check. He is risen. He is risen. The message of Easter is not just that Jesus is alive, it's so much more. The message of Jesus is that Jesus has risen, and with that resurrection comes our hope. I was reading about a fellow named Gary Wills. He's a historian, and he wrote about three proofs of the resurrection. And before I do that, I just want to run a quiz. For those of you that know, I like to run quizzes. I used to be a teacher. Can you remember? And the younger ones, this is it. You probably didn't learn this in school, so I have to rely on those that are slightly older. Can you remember a quiz show that began? Here is the one and only. Groucho Marx. And what was the name of the quiz show? You Bet Your Life. And we are the people who are betting our lives on the life of the one who came alive. Who came alive in us. I used to watch Groucho Marx when I was a very little kid. With my old parents. And one of the questions, he had this little duck with glasses and a mustache that would come down. And as a little kid, I liked the duck. And the duck came down and said, say something, you got $100 or something. You can tell it was a long time ago. But one of the questions I remember, and this is the quiz. Are you ready? This is the tough one. That's why I'm giving you two questions. That's the first one, so easy. Who's buried in Grant's tomb? I knew you guys were smart. But I said that was the reason. So here's the second one. And by the way, on this show, this woman was so nervous she got it wrong. Who's buried in Christ's tomb? Wow. Wow. And that's the proof. Caesar came to Egypt and Europe. He said, here, we'll show you where Alexander the Great is buried. And I said, I'm going to tell me. And so he said, I didn't come to see graves. I came to see the king. In the early church, there was no sense of let's go see where it's buried. The Sunday school teacher, and she was looking, and she was teaching her students that Jesus was buried in a borrowed tomb, Joseph of Arimathea. So, don't you raise your hand? She said, I don't know why. Teacher said, why? You know, I knew him for 3 days. Early church fathers and mothers, the believers didn't care where the tomb was. came in the rules of Christ was so much more important. But there was a nice historical fact. If you go to almost every religion in the world, they have these gigantic edifices for the grave of the great person of their culture. And the Christians didn't care. Until the cross came around and you had to have some place to visit. So he's alive and he is risen. And so the proof of this historian was the disregard they had for the empty tomb. If you love someone, even though they know the person has died, you know where that tomb is. You care about that tomb. And Christ's followers didn't because it was risen. They were more awake than you. He is risen. The second proof this fellow had of this resurrection was the multiple appearances of Jesus who appeared to a whole bunch of people. This is really cool. I really like Jesus. I mean, aside from worshiping and all that thing, I like Jesus. He was a cool guy. He just knew how to have fun as well as to bring meaning into our life. So all of the resurrection appearances are by surprise. No one expected any of the appearances. The first appearance was to Mary, and the first appearance was to a woman in a male-driven society. Not because she was a woman, other than perhaps because she was a woman, she was more devoted, more loving of Jesus. So it came to her first to honor her faithfulness. And no one was surprised. How did he know it was her? How did he know it was him? One word. He said, Mary. You know, we use the term with sweetness when we feel love towards someone, like mom or dad. Someone you love, you don't say it the same way. And she heard the love in Jesus' voice, and she knew it was the teacher, Rabboni. The second appearance was to the men. It's always harder to get through the men. Do you agree with them? They're nodding their heads. I'm not going to ask if you agree because it's too hard to get through to. Well, what occurs is he comes through the locked door. And he's had enough of the divine miracle. He comes through the locked door and he appears to them. And they see him and they touch him and they know he's alive. The third appearance. Our focus to Emmaus. In Emmaus, we talked earlier about how they were on the way, and they had sort of given up. You know, it just seemed like there was no hope. And the fact they'd even stolen the body. And he comes and he shows them what has happened. And when he breaks the bread, and they see his hands, they know the love of the one that they follow. One of the really cool things is all three appearances, the people who receive the appearance are essentially lost. They lost their way. They lost their hope. And the man says, we thought he was the one. saying he wasn't. But out of his wondrous love, he appears and he finds them. For if you regularly know the answer to this question, for the others, you'll learn it for next time. You know how we play hide and seek with Jesus? Seek him. Seek him and he will find you. And it works like that because the one who loves finds the one they love who is lost and seeks it with all their heart. And so, you know, I was listening to a sermon by Ralph Palmer, and I just sort of finished with this. Ralph Palmer looked at this philosophically, and he said how there used to be a feeling that life was in balance, that there was, life was half good and half bad. We've ever felt that. I'll give you an example of how people apply it. Did you have everything going well, and then wonder what would go wrong? Have you ever felt that way? We had Palm Sunday, that was a good day. And Friday was a bad day. And Easter was a day greater than all the bad days. Easter was when the reign of God reached a new possibility in our lives to empower us from our. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And as long as we have him, we have a way to life. He said, all you who are labor and heavy burden, come unto me and I will give you rest. He said, I offer you peace, not as the world gives it to you. He gives us a peace and a love that's more powerful than our circumstances. And he does this because he proved his promises. He proved that he can keep his promises. Awesome promises. For the thief, he offers forgiveness. He is alive and unforgiven. Today, you shall be with me in paradise. The final proof of the resurrection was the seismic change in the followers of Jesus. It transformed them completely. There's an interesting historical proof of this. It's in the Roman Empire. Fairly early in the Christian church, a major plague hit Rome. More Christians survived this plague than any group of people in Rome. Not because of a miracle in the way we define a miracle sometimes, but nonetheless miraculous. Because the Christians no longer fear death, they feared not living as the Christ. They feared not loving as they had been loved. So when the plague hit, unlike the rest of society who were getting rid of the victims who were sick as fast as possible before they got infected, they cared for them. And way out of proportion, Christians survived because Christians took the faith to care for the dying. Instead of being afraid of death, and it changed. A defining moment in our history and in our lives. I have shown an illustration at least a couple of Easters. once upon a time, as you know, I was very afraid of a disease. It killed my father. It didn't kill me, but it took away his capacity to be who he was. And I used to read illustrations of people who dealt with great travail, great struggle, and how they conquered through the grace of God. And there was a pastor named Mark Sanford, and he was a great preacher, and he had a disease much like Lou Gehrig's disease. And it was seriously affecting him and getting worse and worse. And they had a person buying him 24 hours a day. And it was Easter time. I believe the Easter time of the last year of his life. And he wrote to his daughter, "Helen, Easter day, of this disease, are unable to talk or walk." He wrote, "It is terrible to wake up Easter morning and have no voice with which to shout. He is risen, but it would be far more terrible to have the voice and not want to shout. He has risen indeed. And he has made his appearance not just 2,000 years ago, but in all the days of our lives."